Welcome to Engineering Success. I'm your host, Jamie Hutton, and in each episode we'll bring you an influential and inspiring guest from the world of engineering, science, technology and mathematics, sharing fascinating insights into their career journeys. We'll explore the challenges they face, how they keep motivated, and what the future holds for them. Speaking candidly about the engineering and other STEM-related industries, we'll find out what's made these successful people successful. This is Engineering Success. Welcome to episode number 44 of Engineering Success with our very special guest, Jacqueline Chinwey, a future energy leader and STEM advocate. Jacqueline has 7 years' experience in the oil, gas and renewable energy sector, representing a few of the top-tier international oil companies and national oil companies within the EMEA and APAC region. She holds a degree in oil and gas management and a master's in offshore and ocean technology with subsea engineering. Her career initiated as projects control engineer, leading large infrastructure projects across Europe, Asia and Africa. She is currently a finance business partner for the strategy, sustainability and ventures team at BP, providing business performance oversight to BP's executive leadership team. Jacqueline has a huge passion for the progression of females, underrepresented ethnic groups and those from disadvantaged backgrounds. She is an advocate for DE&I, psychological safety and mental well-being, appointed ambassador at BP, a board member at AFBE UK and future energy leader 2023 at the World Energy Council. Jacqueline is well known for a diligent synthesis of stamina, skill and talent, previously involved in strategic initiatives to challenge the status quo. She aspires to become a global energy leader who implements positive change and brings forth sustainable energy transition solutions. Hi Jacqueline, and welcome to Engineering Success. It's great to have you on the podcast today.
Oh, absolutely. I've been looking forward to this. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Can we start right at the beginning? What first made you become interested in engineering?
Okay, well, I'll start with a bit of background as to what I studied. So I am predominantly in the energy sector, and that started from growing up in the region of South Nigeria, where I was surrounded by the energy industry's presence, and Nigeria positioning itself as the richest oil state in Africa, which is river states, which painted a picture of the power and potential of energy. And as a child, I was naturally drawn to science and exploration, and I was always curious about how things worked. And I didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do yet, but what fascinated me was the convergence of science, technology, and business. So I then started my first degree, which was oil and gas management, which was like a business management degree, but focused on the energy aspects. And I did a research paper learning about this industry and the technical skills gap that it had. And that gave that curiosity to find out, to delve deeper. And I even did a research paper on why is that technical skills gap present? And that's the realization of the talent pool at the time and even now, but it was even worse 10 years ago, not giving my age away, but a few years back, not utilizing the full talent pool, and whether this is underrepresented groups in terms of ethnicities or, you know, women going into engineering, because of course it was very male dominated. So that curiosity actually got me to say, do you know what, I'm going to give engineering a go. I had not had a background. Yes, I was great at science, but I had not had a traditional engineering background. But just from that research paper, I was so curious to go on to study engineering and actually see why we got a technical skills gap in this field. So that curiosity is actually what led me to engineering.
Wow, yeah. Great story. So obviously you did a degree. Where did you do that degree?
So my first degree was at Plymouth University, so that's oil and gas management.
Yeah.
And then I went on to do a master's in offshore and ocean technology with subsea engineering at Cranfield University. So Cranfield University is only for postgraduates. It's a private postgraduate school of engineering.
Right.
And they are very tough. So having not had an engineering background and having the courage to do a master's in such a specific topic.
Yeah.
So with subsea engineering, covered materials engineering, corrosion, a bit of technical project management, or project engineering, really. It was more kind of mechanical based, looking at the exploration and a little bit like petroleum engineering and what goes on offshore.
Yeah.
So that was really out of what I had planned, but it was so interesting.
Yeah, it sounds very, very in-depth.
Yeah, so those were the two degrees I did, and it positioned me to have that commercial exposure, but also be able to have that technical hat on.
Yeah, absolutely. So most of your career has been spent as a senior projects controller. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that sort of position entails?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to provide some insight. So as a senior or as a project controls engineer, regardless of what level you're at, my role serves as a vital bridge between the strategic planning and then the hands-on execution of energy projects of large infrastructures. So essentially, I'm tasked with, let's say, orchestrating what goes on behind the scenes of elements that are essential for project success.
Yeah.
So one of the core aspects of my role is cost management. So I work closely with the project team to develop, monitor, and manage the budgets, which involves analyzing side financial aspects of the project, tracking sort of the expenses, the budget, all the way from pre-FEED, which is pre-financial investment. So all the way from, you know, the initial R&D, I'm trying not to use acronyms too much, down to FEED, to the detailed design, to procurement and construction and commissioning. So all the way from pre-FEED, when we get the financial investment decision from the government, all the way to when it's live and it's commissioned. So not just the cost, this was also the scheduling in terms of mapping out the timelines and the milestones. Obviously, these are big, large infrastructure projects that could take up to, you know, 10 years, depending on where we are.
Yeah.
And then doing a risk assessment of looking at potential challenges and uncertainties that can happen with the project timeline and budget, and then also doing a performance analysis in terms of tracking the progress against the project plan. And people always ask me, okay, Jacqueline, it sounds great. Sounds like a project management role, though. So how is this different? And why is it called project controls engineering? But I think ultimately it's the liaison with engineers and being able to understand their technical capacity. So for example, if you're setting up an offshore wind farm, what does that involve? How many gigawatts are we talking? How many turbines do we need? It's liaising with the team at, for example, Siemens, and then linking that with people that, you know, supply the foundations. What foundations are we using? What's the benefit of using floating foundations versus, you know, the ones with a platform?
Yeah.
So it's that technical know-how that brings a, yes, at a high level, I do the project management stuff, but for me to make this a success, I need to have an understanding of what the engineers are doing to be able to link that together. And that is the importance of the role and why it is a full engineering role in its capacity.
Yeah. It sounds like there's a lot of collaboration that you have to do with different engineering disciplines and different teams. Is that right?
Most definitely, because one links to another. So a lot of that is setting up that plan to make sure that the teams are not working in silo. Yeah. And, you know, we're talking sort of $1 million, $1 billion projects, and there is a lot of high risks to them.
Yeah.
So having that person in between to integrate it is really useful and very vital for success in any project.
Yeah. Do you need a lot of soft skills in that sort of positions? It seems like you have to keep a lot of people happy.
Yeah. So I quickly learned. So what's really interesting is I fell into this project controls engineer position at a very junior stage.
Right.
So I was given this opportunity to be a contractor. I can't remember how old I was. I'm sure I was like early 20s, never had any experience at all. And I had to learn the hard way how to sort of sell, how to manage your stakeholders, words to use. So for example, I'll use a project I worked on in Taiwan, for example, where I had Macquarie, an investment bank, with Swanco Energy, and they were looking to build that offshore wind farm and starting right from the beginning, so pre-financial investment. Yeah. And when I worked the plan, I had a lot of senior people. So it was like 10, 12 different, very senior staff. They've all come, you know, from different, some were local for like the permits team, some were just investors. And I had to present this timeline and I shouldn't say this. Well, I didn't necessarily know what I was doing because it was probably the second time I had done something like this. But I had an idea of what it looked like. But how did I communicate that to them? How did I allow the project team to buy into my idea? So even little things like when I first presented, I said, oh, this is the timeline that we're working to. This is the plan we're working to. Someone corrected me and said, no, you need to say this is the proposed plan. So it's just positioning yourself to be able to talk to senior stakeholders, but also to be able to talk to people that are just your peers. So it's managing up, but also managing down. So yes, managing the engineers are important, but being able to translate what the engineers are doing to people on the board at a high level and vice versa is very vital to this position.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would your number one piece of advice be for somebody thinking about a career into engineering?
So my number one piece of advice for anyone considering a career in engineering is to embrace curiosity and commit to continuous learning. The energy sector, for example, is dynamic and it's an ever-evolving landscape. And this is shaped by technological advancements, innovation, innovative solutions, and always different sort of changing global demands. So by nurturing your natural curiosity, you kind of open doors to exploration and discovery, being eager to ask questions. So in my position, I spoke about twice me being new to engineering, but I was willing to put myself out there in terms of seeking out new ideas, perspectives. So having that open mind and embracing a mindset of continuous learning, it's not only an investment in your personal growth, but it's definitely a powerful tool to navigate this industry, especially with things changing so fast, especially on the digital front with, you know, AI being introduced, for example. And I think you said one piece of advice that was.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can give another piece.
Being in a know, if there is a way to just stay attuned to emerging trends and sort of technologies, whether it's following a newsletter or joining forums, attending workshops, it's good just to know what's on ground, really. So yes, you're having an open mind, but at the same time, you're not trying to be a complete novice. You want to know at least what is going on in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. So then how do you think we can try and infuse the next generation of talent into engineering?
How we can infuse them?
Yeah.
I think being involved with STEM outreach projects, so whether these are hands-on workshops or interactive demonstrations to showcase that passion, but also give people experience or the opportunities to know what being an engineer is like.
Yeah.
I think there is a few myths in the industry, whether that's this energy industry or different industries, even just such as media. It was quite interesting when I had my time as the account manager for BBC and I got to learn a bit about what they did on the technical side of things. And you just wouldn't think that media needed engineers, just on a high level. So I think giving that opportunity for people to come in to experience whatever their interest is, whether that is the energy industry, whether that is aeronautical, you know, engineering, software, that could then allow them to have hands-on experience.
Yeah.
And I think also we need to make it a little bit more relatable somehow. Yeah. So engaging through storytelling, visual aids. I know you may have saw what I did on, can be a bit active on Instagram, just you know, we're in a different generation now, and sometimes engineering can be seen as boring, which it actually isn't. So how being able to translate that to the younger generation, the next generation, Gen Z, as they call it, so they can also relate it to what they do. And another thing is that mentorship programs, having people go in there, give them mentorship, and them having the opportunity to hear from people that are doing what they want to do can help inspire them.
That's a great answer. So what then do you think are the biggest challenges ahead of our industry?
I think the biggest challenges is probably, again, some misconceptions that we have in the industry. For example, one myth is that engineering is solely about, you know, technical know-how and mathematical brilliance. And while these are important aspects of engineering, you've even mentioned the fact that collaboration is important, creativity, critical thinking, effective communication. The reason why I could say this is a challenge is having such myths can mean that we don't have enough new people willing, shouldn't say new people, but maybe the, you know, the next generation's willing to come into the industry because either they think they're not enough, or, you know, they're not interested for the reason of the myth. So being able to break down those myths, I think it's very vital. And I speak to my story so much because I didn't come from a background in engineering. So it is very, very relatable. In that terms, another challenge ahead, I think the switch to digital, we speak a lot about innovation, but what exactly are we talking about? That digital transformation, whilst it is welcomed, from my experience, and not a lot of people like change, not a lot of people like the fact that there's going to be systems that are automatically doing things as opposed to the manual labor. So it's that change of mindset where we're not seeing these tools, AI tools or advanced technologies, as a threat, but we are learning to work with them for better solutions. So people get a bit scared and nervous about job replacements and, you know, what does this mean for the future? So if there can be a shift, I say it as a challenge because of how us as humans, you know, relate and adapt to those innovations.
Yeah.
And the third one I'd like to end with is something that, actually, you know, I'm very passionate about. I've already mentioned it. Engineering being male dominated, and yes, there is progress, we are making progress, but it's not necessarily enough progress. I don't want to quote, but I believe in terms of women there's about 12% at the moment, and then from a BME perspective I think around less than 6%. So that still poses a challenge, not just because it's the right thing to do, but again, back to what I was saying in terms of technical skills gap. If we don't have diverse talent, diversity of thought, how are we going to be equipped to be able to drive the solutions that we need to in an ever-evolving world?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree with that, yeah. So how do you keep yourself motivated?
I think maintaining motivation, especially when you're faced with challenges, is very important. And I think the first thing is doing something that I've fallen in love with. When I speak about this, I have become quite passionate about the industry that I'm in.
Yeah.
And I think not just seeing myself as an employee or as a consultant, but being able to grow past that. I believe over my career, I have evolved more into a person who adds value. Yes, every person adds value in this world, but are you really intentional about it? Do you just come to work and tick a box and then go home? But now looking at things differently, so from when I was, you know, working as a project controls engineer to my position now, which we haven't spoken much about, but it's putting that hat on every day of how can I add value to this world? Yes, that sounds big, but let's break it down. How can I add value to the industry? I mean, if that's even too big, how can I add value to the department I'm in?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Seeing yourself as a tool that can bring forth positive change is just, as I'm speaking, you can hear how exciting and motivating that is. Also, secondly, I would say having a network Knowing that you're not alone, knowing that, so whether that's a network at work that you can utilize, if you get stuck, you can go to them and, you know, they can provide you solutions, or outside work who are in your field, keep that passion going. As example, my initiatives, that's even outside of engineering, but, you know, championing D&I, you know, that adds another motivation into what I do, because I see the broader picture of it, not just being for me or about me, but the next generation to come, the next people that are going to be making these decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So then who or what has been your biggest inspiration?
My biggest inspiration, I think they've been in twofold. So firstly, the individuals that's sort of gone ahead of me.
Yeah.
Or is it before me? Shattering barriers and sort of paving the way into the energy industry. I think looking up to people, like, I can name a few. Don't know if I'm allowed to do that.
Yes, you certainly can name a few.
Dr. Cassandra King is a very passionate woman who sort of initiated in the energy industry. She taught me right from when I was at university. Dr. Ollie Fulayan is another person that has really truly been an inspiration in terms of what he's done, the community that him and his sister, Dr. Nikki Fulayan, have created, the Association for Black and Ethnic Engineers. For me, doing things that, I think it goes back to doing things that is not just for them, is totally very inspiring.
Yeah.
And I would say this, I'll be cheeky and I'd say that I also inspire myself.
Right.
When I look, I don't think anyone answers like this, but when I look back at my journey and the fact that I did, you know, I did engineering sort of not having that background, and then how I've been able to transform into sort of this thought leadership example, that in itself allows me to feel relief that there is hope for the next person who is looking to come into this industry has someone, Jacqueline, to approach. And I think it's inspiring that it's like paying it forward, having that opportunity to have someone to also look up to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. So what do you love most about engineering?
I think the ability to innovate, to take an idea and turn it to something that is, you know, either improving people's lives or fulfilling. Because I think the way we address in engineering is, yes, we complete a project from start to finish, for example, working on an asset. But what does that asset contribute to society? So, for example, if there is, I don't know, a project about water generation, looking at the aspects of how is that going to feed positively into the community is what I love. So, yes, it's wearing the project hat, taking these projects forward, but seeing the outcome, the bigger picture.
Yeah.
For example, in my field, we are looking to transition into a net zero, into cleaner energies, and doing those projects with that hat on, that, wow, this is actually going to make a positive impact into a neighborhood, or this is going to allow someone to have more affordable energy is what I love.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, the passion is fuels from my sort of my commitment to engineering. It just drives me to, again, making that lasting difference in the world.
Yeah. And you sort of like touched on it when we were talking about inspiration. You're part of the board at AFB UK, and I believe you are the industry liaison officer. What does that actually entail?
Working as an industry liaison officer for AFBE, I play a vital role in bridging the gap between industry, academia, and professionals. So that is pretty much the mission statement for AFB UK. Yeah. So being able to showcase our talent and make sure that organizations are also attracting, retaining, and progressing talent within Black and ethnic minority backgrounds, because the percentage is underrepresented from many reports we can draw upon.
Yeah.
So what I do is I work with organizations almost as a middle person, linking the community with their industry or whatever professionals that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so just like I said, merging those two together, giving opportunities to communities to come in. For example, we have a project called Transition, where we have people out of universities, they come and they're able to do mock interviews with the company, for example, that they're looking to apply to. And we have quite a lot of students coming in, and then they're given like assessment setups, like practice assessments, just to see how that feels. So it's really also looking at the strategy of the organization in terms of D&I and helping foster that strategy, how to implement it. If there's any workshops that we do, for example, we provide a lot of education, because before you can make that change in terms of your strategy or in terms of getting more sort of diverse pull in, you need to know why you're doing that. So we do offer that educational piece, but most of all, coordinating this again. I think I'm quite good. I keep mentioning this middle person. So I think I officially need to be a middle person specialist. Being able to coordinate that is, yeah, that's pretty much what the role is. And I guess my role as a board member of AFB comes hand in hand with that. But really advocating, my passion, advocating what we do in AFB UK and talking about the amazing gala that we have coming up in November, because I know Dr. Ollie won't be happy if I don't mention it.
Yes, what date is that? Is it the 23rd?
So that is on the 23rd of November. Yeah. Tickets are selling out extremely fast. I believe there's only 30 tickets left.
I believe it might have sold out, to be fair.
Oh, really?
It might have done. So, but we can still mention it because it's going to be a great gala.
Yeah, it is going to be absolutely amazing. We have all our different corporate partners, which I didn't even mention that we have a pool of corporate partners. I think probably over about roughly 100 now that we work with in terms of this goal. So we do that individually, company by company. So everything that is offered is tailored to what the organization needs and requires, because each organization has, you know, different challenges.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned it a little bit earlier, and as engineers, we like to continually develop. How do you continually develop yourself?
I think first and foremost, I actively engage in industry events, conferences, seminars. These gatherings provide a platform for me to stay updated on the latest trends. I think previously we mentioned the advice I'd give to someone in terms of coming into engineering, being in the know. So I'm able to stay updated on the trends, innovations, best practices within energy and the engineering sectors just in general. So by immersing myself in these environments, I gain fresh perspectives and valuable insights that inform sort of my approach in driving meaningful change. Also collaborating with thought leaders. So I am sure you'd mentioned it already in your introduction, but I have been picked as a future energy leader of the World Energy Council. Yeah. And it's a United Nations governed body across 90 different countries with a lot of people, like a cohort put together that is, you know, ministers to professionals, to politicians, to other future energy leaders, for us to all have this discussion in support of the next steps of the energy transition and engaging in insightful discussions and knowledge sharing, which fuels that sort of curiosity again and encourages me to explore different pathways. Another way I develop myself, mentorship, as we've mentioned, is significant in that. So seeking guidance from seasoned professionals who offer wisdom inside and outside. I think my current role, which I haven't mentioned and I'm going to mention, at BP as a finance business partner, so working with executives to help shape their direction of, you know, how they'd like to, you know, how they are spending their funds or their budgets.
Yeah.
Specifically working with the strategy, sustainability and ventures team. It's when I started at BP that I realized how important networking is.
Yes.
Prior to BP, I had an idea that, oh, okay, because I was networking from the place where I was trying to apply for a job or I was looking for a role. Not that I need this person to be in my network along my journey, because they're going to be very insightful for my development.
Yeah.
So mentorship from professionals, but also people that are just have different experiences within industry, has helped me. And I've recently started listening to podcasts. So this is very, I didn't used to. I usually would read a book and then never finish it. but now I've actually got a buddy that every week we pick topics together. So we're both motivating each other. We go through that podcast and then we have reflection sessions. And I found that really, really helpful for me. I've downloaded a few engineering ones, yours, other energy specific ones also.
Yeah. So you do an awful lot of self-development.
Yes, I definitely do. I definitely do.
So finally, looking forward, what does the future hold for you?
Wow, this is, such a wide question. I'm hoping continued success, but my focus remains on the two pillars of fostering sustainable energy practices. So championing that and also fostering an inclusive and equitable industry. So wearing that hat to pioneer sustainable energy wherever I can, you know, driving that innovation and acceleration in the transition towards cleaner energy.
Yeah.
By leveraging my experience, my expertise, and then also the hat of what we spoke about, AFB UK, but not only that, fostering my own industry and ensuring that they value diversity. They know the importance of being empower underrepresented groups, but also speaking about that mental health, psychological safety aspects. But I think that's a bunch of fluff. But on high level, I'm hoping to be someone that motivates other people. So I'm hoping to be the reason why someone doesn't quit their job.
or starts a job.
Yeah. So I'm hoping to be that voice of inspiration, that voice of encouragement, even if, you know, there's not capacity to have them on a one-to-one, you know, if there is a network I have, or is there's an event or something. I think a lot of this I say, but really what I am saying ultimately on a high level is giving back to the community, and not just giving back because I believe it's not a static relationship. I feel if I give back to my community will also give back to me.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Yes, I have a job that I love. Yes, I have experience that I love, but going beyond that and actually seeing how I can be valuable in the community I operate in.
Yeah, yeah, great answer. Jacqueline, that is it. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much. I'm really, really happy. Thank you so much. And I hope that it was useful. And I'm very open to people reaching out to me if they ever have any questions about this industry.
Okay, thank you for listening to episode 44 of Engineering Success with the amazing Jacqueline Chinwe. Jacqueline and I had great fun recording this episode of the podcast, and she is hugely influential and is a dedicated STEM advocate. Jacqueline loves engineering and she's determined to be a brilliant role model for the younger generation of professionals. Giving her time to promoting engineering and working for AFBE UK, Jacqueline is hoping to break down barriers and show there is a place for everybody within the engineering sector. Please follow Jacqueline's journey. All her social media can be found on her podcast webpage. If you enjoyed this episode of the podcast, I'd love for you to share it with somebody. And please comment and subscribe if you can. We've got more great guests coming soon. So until the next episode, have a great day, and I hope you succeed in all you do.